Hello everybody, welcome to a brand new episode, a lot to touch on, so without further ado, let's dive into the latest episode of Far Corner Podcast. Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm okay, man. We saw a lot of action at the weekend, and I was just talking to you. I don't know how we're going to fit all the talking points into like 45 to 50 minutes, but we'll try our best. So, how are you?
I'm fine. I think if you don't waffle too much, you should be able to cover everything. So, yeah.
Of course, I'm the one that waffles. Keep deflected.
Okay, of course.
So, just before we started, you have the same opinion on me as Kylian Mbappe. I was telling you that Mbappe is the first player, like, obviously, club I support, but I don't want to say it on the podcast. Mbappe is the first player that doesn't play for a rival club of the club I support that I'm actually fans of disliking. What is this pride he's exhibiting? Like, you saw, I know you saw the clip of him when he stopped on it because Vitinha passed to Messi over him. Like, that is unacceptable.
Man, the truth is, PSG brought this upon themselves. They did it with Neymar when they went over manager's head to, you know, please Neymar. Thomas Tuchel suffered some of the consequences as well when he was there as manager.
Mbappe lent this bad, right?
No, I don't think Mbappe lent anything. It's just who you want to be. Because to me, I've not actually seen a clip where Neymar was that petulant. Like,
no, so never, ever.
So for me, it boils down to when you earn so much money, then you're not giving power within the club. You can feel like you can do anything. Because at the end of the day, man, that's for you to even do that alone as a professional footballer, you know that you have a vested interest, you have a strong backing. So he knows what he's doing. Even the one that irritated me wasn't even the one that he stopped running, was the fact that after missing the first penalty, I think Gaultier was like, Neymar, you need to take the second penalty. And he went to meet Neymar and he was arguing with Neymar. I'm the penalty taker. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, okay, so, if I'm Neymar, I will stone him the ball in his face. Like, she's so... Like,
the ref will actually give him my red card for hurting his own teammate.
Like, if it's that what it takes for you to put some sense into the kid's head, like what are you doing here? Like, they said that... It's so annoying, man. It's so annoying. Go on.
Okay, I'll just talk about the incident of him when he stopped running. So he actually hurt himself. Because if you look at how the incident played out, he could have gotten a goal at the far post if he had kept running. That's mm-hmm. that. And the fact that Vitinha didn't even pass to him was because he was cut out by players. Messi was open. So how can a normal man being be upset that they passed the ball to a free Messi, Lionel Messi, free, and you are marked and you are upset? Now, as for the penalty incident, so PSG is actually a very funny club, and this is why I say this. So, I think Neymar was the penalty taker last season, but Mbappe now, as the de facto president or owner or sporting director, he has it in his contract, because all of a sudden, it is new contract that he became the official penalty taker for PSG. It's not official. So, it has to be part of what he agreed that he would But then there are two ways that he doesn't take the penalty.
Okay.
Number one, if he's the one that is fouled, like if Mbappe is fouled in the box, he's not allowed to take the penalty, which is such a way to go. I don't know. And then I think I can't remember the second one right now. But basically, the penalty was a handball incident. And then, so Mbappe should have taken it, but Neymar was like was confused since it was a hand, it wasn't a foul. I'm sure Neymar was not confused. Just put Mbappe in his place. And then
what I heard was Gauti like gave an instruction that Neymar should take it.
Yeah. That could have said that because Gauti said that because Mbappe had missed the first penalty. So it's two things. If Mbappe misses a penalty or if Mbappe is fouled in the game, he doesn't get to take the penalty. Like he had missed the first, he doesn't get to take the second. But after the game, even Christophe Gauthier came out and said Mbappe is the penalty taker, which is bizarre. If you told Neymar to take that penalty in the game, or now you come out post-match and you say Mbappe is the penalty taker forward, it's so clear that it was part of his contract agreements for to get his numbers up. Well, all the best to them. I would say that it doesn't hurt them now, but I can see the situation of quarterfinals and final Champions League key penalty. And instead of putting your best penalty taker on the plate, you're going to allow Mbappe to take it. I'm not saying Mbappe will miss again, but I'm just saying that it's better to have your best penalty taker actually take it than your star man. But
Even I'll add to this by saying this. If PSG, the hierarchy, don't come, if they don't send someone from the hierarchy to come downstairs and talk to Mbappe and put him down in his place, like cutting his wings in the dressing room and showing that, look, you're nothing. You need to calm down in
but
this
then,
team.
But it, does it, sorry. Does it take the hierarchy? I think Sergio Ramos,
Messi. Don't worry, I'll come to that.
He should respect these players.
Wait. The hierarchy needs to step in and do that because you can't. The hierarchy can send someone to Italy, whether it's Khalifi, they can send him there to go in there and cut Mbappe's wing. Secondly, Marquinhos, who is the captain, to host a dinner outside the club whereby every player comes and he now needs to tell Mbappe straight to his face. Where everyone is present and putting him in his place, whether by coddling him or by being brutal with it. Either way, he needs to do it. Now, I don't need Ramos to be stepping in or Messi to be stepping in because, let's be real, that's none of their business. Because at the end of the day, it can escalate.
They are senior players
in the dressing room, but at the end of the day, it can escalate because when you look at it, they don't have a leg to stand when it comes to the intricacy of how PSG dressing room. Yeah, so obviously Messi can speak on it, but he won't come out and be vocal about it. This is something Ramos can do. Ramos has done it with Real Madrid. He has settled too many fights. This is something Ramos can do, but I don't think it will be in his best interest doing it. Then it can now make other people angry. All of a sudden, Marquinhos will look at it like, yo, you're coming here to now undermine my captaincy. Do you understand? So, what I'm just saying is, Marquinhos is to step in and carry out his duties as captain and make sure that he squashes the beef in the squad. Then, lastly, for Christophe Gauthier's sake, he needs to step in as well and crush the beef because people don't understand the repercussions of these things. The repercussion of this thing is, when a player puts himself above the team, you're going to suffer the consequences later on in the season. Because now, he will be in a position where Messi is free. There was a point in the match where Messi was free in the box. And Mbappe refused to pass. And when he eventually passed the ball, he overhit it for Messi. And Messi couldn't do anything.
I know Hakimi has been guilty of overlooking Messi. Now, I might sound funny or I might sound like I'm just to be controversial, but if we've been following off the field antics and we know that Messi and Neymar have a bromance going on, and we can say the same for Mbappe and Hakimi, so is it a coincidence that Hakimi sees Messi free a lot of the time and doesn't pass to him?
Yes,
because he's in Mbappe's corner.
Sometimes it's not rocket science. When you watch the game, you can see it's very intentional. It's not like, because for example, when you look at where Hakimi is driving from his rear view and his line of sight,
But they cannot win the Champions League doing all this.
Yes, now that's what I'm saying. It's very clear you can see Messi. So now, yeah, Gauthier is in a position whereby if he doesn't make sure that all those unnecessary nonsense ends. If he doesn't make sure it ends, he'll be in a position where in an important game for them to win, they go on and bottle it. Mbappe refusing to pass to Messi, who is in a better position to score, or Neymar, or any other person, and they go on to lose that match. Gauthier will be in a position where he'll be under pressure, and they can sack him. So people's livelihood are tied to Mbappe's good behavior. If Mbappe doesn't behave well, people's livelihood will suffer. So that's just it.
So last of these two things. Neymar has been great, albeit just two games into season so far. And I think it's because he knew that PSG were open to selling him. And also another slap in his face was he was apparently, according to the media, he was rejected by Chelsea and Man City. So he had to buckle down and show like, oh, you guys are rejecting me. You think I'm finished? Well, this is actually Neymar 2.0, because I think this is actually 2 matches into the season. This is actually looking like something very close to prime Neymar that we've seen in 2 matches. And lastly, on Mbappe, if Mbappe has this arrogance with Messi, Ramos, Neymar as his teammates, then I don't think there's any saving him, really. Because if his teammates were just like regular good players, like, okay, your teammates, I don't mention names, but you know how the regular players, like, they are football legends, like the thing just mentioned. If you have these legends as your teammates, you're proud, then I don't think they're saving you. But I'm even talking about this PSG drama. Let's go to a club that is actually close to your heart. I would have said let's make you happy, but then Barcelona drew goals. This was not the way the season was supposed to start.
Yeah, exactly, man. Going into that game, I was excited. I was expecting 7 goals. Lewandowski hat trick. I needed that statement from them. But at the end of the day, man, it just boiled down to two things. Xavi's tactics, obviously, was one of them. The setup wasn't there. The setup wasn't there. It wasn't right. Mara was starting as a right back in a game where you actually need more attacking players. Then what else? We saw three players had their debut. Not that the three players were bad on the day. That's Rafinha, Lewandowski, and Christensen. It's just that when you throw in three players playing in front of 90,000 fans, like, it's too much to ask. That's why you can now see that in so many of the build-up, their chemistry wasn't there. You can see Busquets wasn't able to link up well with Rafinha, which is long diagonals, because that synergy is not there. Even with Lewandowski linking up with Dembele. So to me, I think what's let Barcelona down is Xavi's tactics in the first half, because he switched it up in the second half. Then poor finishing, because if you actually look at the game, Barcelona actually created chances, but they didn't quite convert them. So yeah, I think that is just it. And now they are now chasing Real Madrid, who has taken 3 points after making so many changes in the weekend.
While I agree with everything you said, I think you left out someone. It's not like you to be coddling Dembele. You didn't mention Dembele. Dembele, for me, had a below average game, because you had a lot of people passing to Dembele. Dembele will shoot when he's not supposed to shoot, or he will cross and he's out of bounds for a goal kick or whatever. So I was disappointed with Dembele. And for the three new players making a debut, you could see that Lewandowski was frustrated because there was really no quality service. And I don't know, some trolls on Twitter already saying he will struggle. I don't think it's that bad. But I think what it shows is that he needs the service. If he doesn't get the service, he might as well not even have Lewandowski on the pitch, because he's not going to take the ball from the halfway line and dribble and score a wonder goal. That's not his game. And you talked about... before I even get to that, for Xavi, I don't know if you felt the same way as me. I think some of the passing was too slow. Like, no urgency. There was no, like, we need to score now. It was just a time of... And obviously, there's a balance. Like, even Man City do it too. Be patient. And opening will come. They will make a mistake. Then you play the killer pass. But if you wait for that opening and it doesn't come, are you not supposed to try and do something different? To me, it was just like... It was straightforward for Rayo Vallecano to defend because there was no pace in the passing. It was all predictable and slow and steady. A bit like Chelsea last season. Chelsea against Everton. First match of the season. I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah, I get what you mean. But at the end of the day, even the passes that we saw were not even accurate enough. Some of them were too rushed. They were erratic. Like, they were just all over the place, like, against Rayo Vallecano. Even there was a time where they're now spamming crosses. Like you said, if you don't create service for Lewandowski, we struggle. And one thing that was even evident was when you start Rafinha and Dembele, there is no other player that can be much of a goal threat.
That's why Ansu Fati and Ferran Torres might actually need one of them might have to be starting games.
Yes, because when you look at
back post
Nobody is actually pulling defenders away from Lewandowski so that Lewandowski can be free. Do you get it? Like, when Fati came on, you can see now Lewandowski was more free. I don't know if you saw where he actually missed a chance where he bent it with his left foot. It was very, very close. He bent it with his left foot. It was close to going in. That's because now all the defenders are not on him because now Fati is creating runs, you know, going into the box and making himself a nuisance as well. So with Dembele and Rafinha, you don't get that always because they are out wide trying to, you know, stretch the pitch.
So I think the intention from when Barcelona bought them, renewed Dembele and got Rafinha was for one of them to start on the right-hand side and one to be on the bench. I think that was the plan. Then Ansu Fati and Ferran Torres of the left. But the good preseason deceived Xavi. This is why I said this is why I always tell people don't read too much into preseason. Rafinha was fantastic during preseason. Dembele was fantastic during preseason. And all of a sudden, instead of picking one of them, like should have been the case, he was like, oh, these two guys are in great form. I should start both of them. Forgetting that the team balance is not going to be right. Like you said, you need someone to run inside, make late runs to the box, back post. That's Ansu Fati's game. That's Ferran Torres' game. So it takes something away. And I'm actually disappointed in Xavi to be carried away by preseason results. And one other thing. Why is Gavi starting over Frenkie de Jong? Like, I was scratching my head when I saw the lineup. And then after the performance Frenkie de Jong put in, I was scratching my head for that. You can tell me Gavi is better than this guy. In the future, Gavi might be better. Well, I don't know. But right now, I've been having this debate on Twitter.
Listen, the truth about it is this. Frenkie, for a major part of last season, when Xavi Hernandez came, he used... Frenkie was abysmal. Like, he was so average. So, you cannot get that consistent tune from Frenkie. Like, I'll say this now for free.
What of Frenkie last weekend?
Wait, Frenkie last weekend to me was okay. He didn't do anything special that I've not seen Frenkie do. He didn't, to me...
Was he better than Gavi?
Yes, he was better. Obviously, he was better than Gavi.
Exactly, that's my point.
So, what I'm saying now is, Frenkie will start the next game. Possibly, he will start the game after that. He will start more of the games in future. Now, watch Frenkie de Jong. Now, people will now tell me, he's not playing as a double pivot. That's why it's not... Excuses upon excuses. 4 years now, people are still giving these guys excuses. So, we'll just wait and see on that. So, I will not argue with that. But all I'm saying is, yes, Gavi is too young. Xavi should not rush his development. And I think rushing his development will not be good for Gavi. So, please, just allow Gavi grow into the player that we hope he can become. Instead of rushing him, yeah, start Frenkie so that when he doesn't go.
I think this start Frenkie thing is obviously going to happen because Busquets got a red card, Franck Kessié got injured, so he's going to start him by default. Not that he's going to break into starting line.
Even if at the end of the day he's going to start. So what I'm saying is, after the Real Sociedad game, more games in the future, Frankie will be the starter. But the thing about Frankie is, in his Barcelona career, he has failed to, you know, stay consistent.
Okay. The last thing you said when we started talking about Barcelona, you said Araujo was or too defensive to be a right back in such a game that you're going to dominate possession. You said Junior Des so bad that he cannot even make the squad.
That's how bad he is. The truth is, that's how bad he is. I think we've seen in the last 3 days where Barcelona in for Foyth. So me personally, I don't like Foyth, but
Foyth is also very defensive. Like, he's not a Barcelona sort of player.
No, I don't think Foyth is defensive. I think Foyth is very good on the ball. He can progress the ball where he can play. He's a very good he can progress the ball very well. That is one of the strengths.
Okay. So I'm thinking classic Barcelona. Dani Alves, Jordi Alba.
There's no classic Barcelona anymore. Let's stop all these things. Those days are gone. You have to be realistic with what you're seeing in the market. That is the truth. It's just like people asking for clutch players like Didier Drogba now. There are no such players anymore. Today, we are coddling strikers. We are coddling strikers and mediocrity. Look at Nunes. He has not done anything and he feels like he can be headbutting people. But we'll come to that. So my point now is, at the end of the day, we are now in a generation whereby a man will make a comment about the football being back and everybody will now start acting woke and saying, he's misogynistic. We'll come to that as well. So at the end of the day, man, see, at the end of the day, what I'm just saying is, we're in an era where so many, many things have changed. So you just have to adjust to the times. That's what I would just say. And that's just it about Barcelona. It's not a performance that I would say that.
Okay.
You said?
No, I just wanted to say, like, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think about the Busquets red card? Because to me, that was a wrong decision.
Yeah, I think it was harsh. I just think it was. Yeah, like, obviously, I would say to me, it's a foul. But I just think it was harsh, fooling it up with the yellow. So, but at the end of the day, man, it is what it is. Like, for me, personally, I'm even happy that Busquets is not there. Like, I want to see how Xavi can cope under pressure. Do you understand? He has been having it rosy for a while now. Like, he has been having it his way. Now, solve this situation by winning a game without Busquets, one of your favorites. So, win it and let's see how good of a manager you can be.
Of which he's actually going to face a respectable opposition. It's not relegation for that they are playing next. Real Sociedad is very decent team. We'll see how it goes. Now, over to England. I mean, there is a truckload of things we can talk about. You mentioned Darwin Nunes. So, let's start with Liverpool. Liverpool coming to joint favourites with Man City for the title. 2 games in, no win. What's going on?
Like, honestly, I can't put my finger around it. So people will tell you, oh, they miss Sadio Mane and all of that, but
let's just continue.
For me, I'll just say I can't put my finger around it. The only place that you can say you're considerably, like, we can consider that they are weak is their midfield. Obviously, their midfield hasn't been quality for a while now. You need sort of quality. The only orchestrator in the midfield is Thiago. Fabinho too has dropped as well in recent times. So when you look at your attack, Salah is still there, still being Salah. The only difference now is not able to convert his chances. And I think against Manchester United, that won't be the case. So I feel like Liverpool right now, they're in a situation whereby they are not really doing many things wrongly. I feel like once the first victory comes, they will be able to now, you know, go on back-to-back wins. Because when you actually look at it, like, we have to actually credit Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace did their homework playing Eze in the midfield. Because Eze, when you look at Eze and understand the kind of midfielder he is a midfielder that is very, very good at beating opposition press. Because he's comfortable at the ball, he's press resistant, and he can dribble in tight spaces. And when he was able to pick that ball, turn, dribble, and play the ball behind Liverpool's back line for them to beat the high line. I knew that that was a goal. Immediately, the reason why I knew that that was a goal was, who was Van Dijk's partner again? What is his name?
Nat Phillips.
Nat Phillips. When Nat Phillips lost his footing, I was like, let me look at Van Dijk. Immediately, I saw Van Dijk go back to the same thing he normally does. I knew that Zaha has scored. Like, obviously, people will listen to this. Like, I made a TikTok about it, and I got so many messages, so many comments about it, and people were slandering me. Like, when you don't go touch tight as a defender, you've given the attacker a lot of room to do what they want to do. And I immediately saw Van Dijk do the exact same thing he normally does. I was like, this is a goal. And immediately Zaha took it. I knew that he's going to score.
You know the thing about this Van Dijk thing, yeah? I have a problem with you backtracking, because I'd rather you backtrack than make a rash tackle and you out of the game completely. Where I draw the line is, you don't backtrack all the way to you standing loss. You backtrack to the point of, okay, when you get to the box, you now have to do something. If cover has not come to help you, like to double team the attacker, you have keeper. I don't work walking back. It's, for me, that's the only problem with it. I don't say you don't need to be aggressive all the time, but it gets to a need.
You know what it is. He's too, like, I don't understand. Like, it's the same thing I keep saying. I'll use this an analogy as example. You cannot go to a market and see a butcher without blood on their clothes. Now Van Dijk will come onto the pitch the same way he came on. That's the same way he's living. Very clean, hell gel back. Exactly. Have you seen a goalkeeper? The only goalkeeper I've seen that he can leave the same way he comes into a pitch is Edison. That's the only goalkeeper I can say, okay, he leaves the same way he enters, because he doesn't really do much. City, they have the possession and all that. But my point is, he cares too much about not trying to not be a meme. Like, go on, tackle. If you're not, nobody's even saying tackle all the time. But at least take touch tight so that you don't have to give the attacker so much space. Because when you give attacker so much space, you've practically made their decision for them. That's just what I'm saying.
For what the problem is, generally, like you said, the midfield is lacking creativity. Obviously, for Nat Phillips to play, it tells you that they are injury worries. So, Matic, Konate, were not fully fit. Also, for the money thing, see, I've been seeing on Twitter, they miss money. Salah is still there, right? Last season, second half of the season, Mane was with Mane on the pitch. What?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so Mane, second half of the season, was playing as a false nine, and Luis Diaz and Mane were playing well together. And so now the only change is Darwin Nunez for Mane. Obviously, Darwin Nunez is sloppy. But one thing for Darwin Nunez for is that he's a goal threat. He has scored. I say the goal was lucky. He didn't mean it, but he has scored. He has assisted. And so for me, the problem is in that midfield. I'm not saying Mane was useless. Obviously, miss a player like him. But Mane being out is not the major reason for their appeal to win. I don't know if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's
part
of it. But
no
one can tell me. Yeah, so that. I think it was naive, because Anderson was winding him up all game and he fell for it. He's young. I think he's 22. We know how these things, like, players can make mistakes. I'll put them as time goes on. He said that he thinks he has a relationship on that.
What I'll just say is, guys, hope you can listen to Josh. His network is as bad as Darwin Nunes' performances. So what I'll say is this. At the end of the day, Darwin Núñez was naive, like you said. And I think Jurgen Klopp needs to actually make a decision on how he's going to handle him going forward, because you cannot allow a player get wound up easily like that. And now, like I say, it cost them the game, but to me, that's just a flimsy excuse. I even made a video about Klopp being the Mr. Excuse Man. Last week he said, the pitch was dry. This week he said witchcraft are chasing them. Like, so I don't know, man.
but this witchcraft stuff, I think, is more of a joke, was it not?
No, of course. At the end of the day, everything is just joke about that, but man, Klopp comes up with the weirdest thing. But that's what I'll say. Let's move on to more juicy things, since we're limited on time. There's a point I want to drive home. There's a play I want to call out in this podcast.
I think I know the person. So let's talk about, so you can make your point. City, that's a point win. So let's hear it. Talk bash you folding your free. The floor is yours.
All I would say is very simple, huh? Phil Foden ruined the hopes and dreams of millions of managers last weekend. You see, Phil Foden, I have never seen somebody as selfish as... See, I've seen so many selfish players, eh? But when you now start acting selfish like that, like if I was Haaland, I could have kicked him. Like, that's how angry I
am. You're going to get the guy. You seem to forget. You talked about your own teammates.
Let me tell you how you will kick him. As he did it, when he's celebrating his own goal, you just kick him. Bam. That is part of the celebration. It's part of it. You don't need to do it so aggressively. Just kick him and tell him, yo, look at it. And thank God, Pep Guardiola was actually...
Pep is a no-nonsense man. He subbed him off at halftime. Great. After...
That was pure stupidity. Your top nine is there for you to give him the chances
it
for
happened.
You to bury.
A simple tap it.
See, if you fold it, you will never...
Is it? I think this is more... this is more what the FPL Leonard talking.
Forget about FPL now. Forget about FPL, huh? Like, there are some things that irritates me, huh? It's just like when I was... Let me give you an example now. You see Barcelona's game. There was a point where Dembele the ball into the box. Dembele dribbled the first guy. All Dembele had to do was play the ball into the net. Do you know what Dembele did? He passed the ball to the goalkeeper. Like, you see moments like that. My brain... I don't know if it happens to you guys, but my brain just shrinks. My brain shrinks immediately. Like,
how did this happen? Like, what?
Like, I'll be like, what just happened? Like, I can't comprehend this nonsense. That is the same thing when I saw food, and I was like,
okay, let me ask. So let me just ask this. Right? I have my own answer. I'll answer the question after you. If Foden had scored, does it make it excusable? Like, if Foden had actually scored that chance.
No. Me and you were talking about this thing, yeah? Bad decision can lead to good outcome. But it doesn't make the bad decision okay. So now I can say, I will go and carry my school fees and play Bet Ninja, and all of a sudden, and I win 20 million naira. That is bad decision leading to a good outcome. But now, when you will not... kill the person for making such a bad decision.
Are you sure you've not done it before?
Relax. This is not from experience. So when usually normal people, they bash bad decision when it leads to bad decision, bad outcome. For example, if I use that my school fees now to stake, and the school fees ended up going down the drain and nothing comes out of it, people will now start bashing me for using my school fees. But I don't think that should be the case. I think when you look at the decision making of a person, you should be able to analyze if that is a bad decision, regardless of the outcome. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you, because for me, if I'm Guardiola, if Foden scores, is when I will even bash him more. Because scores and you don't bash him, he'll do it again, and that next time he will miss. And when and that next time, and that next time might be Champions League semi-final. It might even be Champions League final. It might be a title decider, Premier League. And then because you let this one slide, he's going to keep doing it. I that he subbed him up for halftime. It shows that. And we know that Foden is actually one of his favorite players. He has talked about how Foden is so talented that sometimes he's in awe of Foden's talent. But still, he subbed him up for halftime. So it shows that he's here. It's like you pass the ball to Haaland. He's our number nine. You feed Haaland or you're off the team. So I love it. I love discipline in the team. There's no need to talk about the results or the game itself. 4-0.
That's how it should be. Yeah, they were imperious. Masterful performance from KDB. And Bournemouth could not touch them. So it just shows how strong City is at the moment. I'm not sure Edison made any dive or anything. I think he was just standing from and spectating like us.
The Bruno's goal was just something else. The guy is there's an argument that has been going on. It's the Bruno is best player in the Premier League. I think people tend to mistake who is the most clinical player and who is the best player. Most clinical player might be Salah, it might even be Kane, but best player is De Bruyne easily.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now let's talk about something. Sure, the Chelsea sports game.
Yeah, man. It was a fantastic game of football. Chelsea kept the high line because they could now accommodate. They could keep the high line simply because they have Kalidou Koulibaly, who is fast, very technical. They also had Reece James, who is also good at recovery as well. So they kept the high line. The Chelsea press was consistent. I don't remember Spurs doing anything apart from the goal. Like, the only thing I can remember Spurs doing was in the first 5 minutes where Kulusevski failed to play Son in. He undercooked the pass. Then the second thing was, I think if quick free kick where they actually played Sessegnon through, and
he should have scored. I actually thought it was offside because he was so free.
Yes, he was so free. Like that was a very perfectly timed ball. But at the end of the day, that is the only thing I remember Spurs doing. Every other thing was from Chelsea. Like the game just, further allow time. Sometimes I forget my vocabularies because I'm thinking of so many things at the same time. But like, it exposes some of the things that we've been talking about in regards to Chelsea. Raheem Sterling, they signed Raheem Sterling, good player, but will Raheem Sterling be that clinical? Chelsea are going to that weeks whereby, for the third season running, Jorginho might actually be one of their top scorers again. Like you need to deep it. Jorginho being their top scorer 2 years ago
with penalties only,
being one of their top scorers last season as well. I think their top scorer was Mason Mount. I think after Mason Mount, it should be Jorginho. So, like, my point is the point I'm trying to drive home at is, like, Chelsea, they need other sources of goals. Now, the chances that we saw Raheem Sterling miss, the chances we saw Havertz miss as well, like, it's so
annoying. That was James Cross, my goodness. That... God.
Yeah, so my point, the point I'm trying to make is, Chelsea, there's still time. There's 14 days left in the window. I think Chelsea can do some business before the window closes because I feel like they actually need a striker that they can rely on. So that
they need a midfielder.
Yeah, they also need a midfielder, like you said. Because
I mean, Kante was obviously injury prone since last year.
Yeah. You're obviously pointing out like they need a midfielder that they can rely on because at the end of the day, the ones they have are currently injury prone. So for the amount of games Chelsea play, they need someone that they can rely on week in, week out in terms of
fitness. a midfielder that they actually have, who I know your opinion about him, Loftus-Cheek played at right wing back. And
God, bro.
He was better than I thought he would be, but still, I don't know if you were impressed with his performance.
This is what I don't like. He was just okay. He has been bad.
That's what I said. He was better than I thought. I didn't praise him.
There's something I want to even point out. We do it as football fans. Like, when a player has been so bad, when they now give a normal performance, we think it's one kind of world-class performance. Do you understand? Like, that is what is expected. That is what is expected of him to do. Like, it's just the same thing about Frankie de Jong.
Of which he didn't give any cross, like we saw with James second half when he got to that position. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, I'm not trying to downplay what he did. He had a good game, but all I'm saying is like, that is what is we should be expecting from someone like Lucas Chick. So at the end of the day, Chelsea were very good. They really, really deserve to win. But at the end of the day, we've done an episode on this, the impact of poor refereeing. So that's what...
Now you've gone there, so you might as well do it. I know you texted me after the game, and obviously you're a Chelsea fan. So it shows that you don't even need to be a Chelsea fan to be incensed by the decisions, whatever word you want to use. Through the incident after the other, and the first goal, there were two reasons that it could have been called off. Is there any way out for the referee? Any reason he didn't give the decision?
Obviously, there's a new directive that not all tackles should be fouled. Yes. And like Graham Souness, we'll come to that soon, he was saying in Sky Sports Studio, he likes it. And me too, I like it because it makes the game faster.
But that particular tackle, was he a foul?
More free-flowing. I'll get to it. It makes the game faster, more free-flowing. Now, let's look at the Havertz tackle. Did Bentancur win the ball? Yes, he won the ball. But did he go through Kai Havertz to win the ball?
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. And was it forceful? Yes, it was forceful. That's why Kai Havertz went down like that. Now, when you take those three things into account, that is illegal in football. Now, obviously, Chelsea didn't cover themselves in glory with Jorginho trying to... I don't know what he's trying to do.
Yeah, because they got the ball back. So I understand why they didn't take it back.
Yeah, exactly. So Chelsea did cover themselves in glory. But at the end of the day, there was a foul in the build-up to the goal. So to me, Anthony Taylor acting like he saw it by pointing, yo, you got the ball. That's really so annoying. So that should not be... Like, to me, that is just poor. Like, look at where you know that it's clowns that are refereeing that game. I think Mike Dean was the VAR referee.
Yeah, he was.
Then Anthony Taylor is on the on-pitch referee, like two absolute clowns. They could have just added Michael Oliver as the fourth man, as the fourth official, so that we get complete the trio. Like that's just the truth. They could have just added him.
So to be fair to the referees, it was 44 seconds between the tackle and the goal. How far back is too far back? 44 seconds, it sounds like a lot to go back for.
Okay, you're giving them excuse. Don't worry, we'll come
to
the second incident. I want
I'm
to see what the excuse will be. Okay, no problem. Let's shake hands now. I agree with you. Let's give them that one. No problem. Let's give them that one. So what is the excuse for the shot?
No. For the shot where Richarlison was in an offside position, there's no excuse. The same goal. There's no excuse for that one. That's why I said they had two reasons to cancel the goal.
Like honestly, the what is it called? The Charlie one, like to me it was just, it's too complex. Like it's just to me, just 50-50. Like I don't know. Like to me, if it's not clear and obvious that this guy is blocking a goalkeeper's sight, I hate seeing all those kind of goals get cancelled. If it's not clear that this guy is blocking the sight of the goalkeeper, I hate seeing all those goals cancelled. That's why I didn't mention that one.
We have opposing views on this because for me, the Kai Havertz own should not be called back because 44 seconds, 44 seconds. And then for me, the main reason was Jorginho had the ball, Chelsea ball back. Again. So those are two reasons why that shouldn't be called as a foul. Like, it shouldn't be called back.
To me, that 44 seconds thing, I've seen games in the ref in the Premier League where they took it back. Even last season, we talked about this in the podcast, where a Chelsea game, I think Chelsea scored. They now had to chop off the goal, then take it back.
But again, it was like up to like 1 minute, 60 seconds or so.
So my point is, all these shows are not excuses.
Against Southampton, I think.
I think all these shows are not just, they are just excuses to me. Like, they're not good excuses. They're not good enough excuses, because if they want to actually take off a goal, it's not hard for them.
And then let me bust your head. Let me bust your head. My dean was the official for that game. When they took the ball back over 100 seconds and cancelled the Chelsea goal against Southampton.
Okay.
But 44 too much for him this time around. I think it was about 113 seconds. I'm not sure. I saw it somewhere. 113 seconds was not too much, but 44 seconds was too much. But then for the offside, quickly, right? For me, it's very simple. Mendy was in his goal. Richarlison was direct line of Mendy. But for me, what really makes it clear is Mendy had to look to the left of Richarlison. He had to bend towards his left. And obviously, it takes a split second for you to, like, either you're diving immediately the ball is hit, because 1 second can make you miss the ball by just an inch. So the time he's using to look left, and the ball has already left the foot of Højbjerg. The time he now goes, okay, he's playing the ball to my right. For him to now look left, look right, and dive, he has affected, Richarlison has affected, because he didn't touch the ball, but he impacted on the way Mendy dived the ball, in terms of he had to look left then dive right, which is obviously not ideal. It should be, you're seeing the ball and you're diving right straight, not you're looking left and looking right. That's that. And for me, the other thing is, if they are going to say it's allowed, this sort of thing is allowed, all and good, but they should just know that smart people, because I've actually thought of it, smart people and smart teams, all you need to do is just put someone in an outside position. He doesn't touch the ball, he affects the keeper, you score, and it will keep happening time and time. Okay, this is the first incident this season. Trust me, if it happens a second time, the goal is not cancelled. Whichever team scores, the goal is not cancelled. Third time, the goal is not cancelled. It's going to become a tactic for teams to use. And that is where I think that they got it wrong, because you have to nip such things in the ball, because it is... What do they say? When there's a rule, it's like a loophole. Exactly, it's a loophole, because teams can keep using it.
At the end of the day, that loophole will get corrected. Chelsea, they'll be the beta testers. But it will get corrected when people start exploiting it. So, I don't think... Let's move on to the one. I want to see what the excuse for this one is. Now, that's what I'm waiting for, please. So break it down. Bring it. Drop the hammer on the nail.
Give it. Can I have it or not? Not being, but this one, right? Let me just first of all say, I cannot defend the referee. I cannot. But then I can, in a way. I'm coming to that.
Okay. No. I want to hear it, though. Don't waste time. Let me hear it, because, so that I can bash you and bash the referee together. So let me hear
No. Who should have been chalked off. Let me just put it out there. In fact, not it should have been chalked off. The corner shouldn't have been played. Okay, so let me see what I had to say. So there was a corner. Let me just paint the scenario for someone who didn't watch. So there was a sports corner late in the game, and you have Cristiano Romero try to plate Marco Correa's hair in the box 18. He was dragging him. I don't understand it. He dragged his hair. He twisted his head. Obviously, Cucurella fell down. Then, the referee didn't give anything. Obviously, the referee was standing right there, right? Now, you see what blew my mind. They checked it for a possible red card. So for them to be checking a red card, just a foul. I don't know if I'm making sense. You check something for it's not a red card, but then because it's not a red card, it's not a foul. And then because it's not a red card, the second corner is played and the goal is scored. So when you look at it, it doesn't make any sense from that aspect. But then the problem now lies in two things. The interpretation, the way VAR is meant to act, the laws of the game. So, okay. Number one, the way VAR is meant to act is VAR doesn't count, which is what I told you last season. I remember I go a game as Sevilla won United by a long goal. I don't know if it was 2-1 or 1-0. And they had a corner that shouldn't have been a corner and they scored from it. And I told you that VAR should be counseling such goals because they should check if it was meant to be a corner in their space. And we're here on this spot. No, VAR cannot be doing everything. VAR cannot be doing everything. It will spoil the game. So I still have that. Don't worry, you can't even deny it. So now it's the same thing here. I cannot cancel Kane's goal because VAR cannot go back to say. So basically, the only way VAR would have intervened is if Romero was required, that would be a penalty. But then, or if from that particular corner, let's say as Kukwera fell down from the same corner, we have cancelled the goal. But because it was not the same corner, they have the second corner coming, and then there's nothing they can do about it. That's one. Two is, you know how we always say that you cannot cover every aspect of the game in terms of the rules of the game. Like, every scenario cannot be covered. There's actually nowhere in the laws of the game that holding something foul. It's common sense. We know. Me and you know that it's not allowed. It's not wrestling. But it is not in the laws of the game. Which for me, I find it quite funny that it's not in the laws of the game because it happened before. I know Fellaini got his hair pulled when he was in the Premier League. Because it's not in the laws of the game, I didn't. So, is the floor is yours now.
Okay, I'll be very short so that my point will be hit home. Now, you said so many things. Yes, I believe that VAR should not be going far back. Like, when a phase, I told you that day, when a certain phase is gone, there's no need coming back. So now, for example, as they score that goal, there's no need coming back since they cannot correct it from the initial phase where the incident happened. So if they cannot correct it from the initial corner, now a new corner has been taken. That's a new phase. So that is gone. Cool. Now, I want to ask you a question. You said common sense is not in the rule of the game. I want to ask you a question. Are you listening? Very simple question.
Yeah.
The same game, the same thing, but this time, listen, you know, the person pulling Cucarella's hair is Granit Xhaka. It's Granit Xhaka. Will he get a red card? Okay, you're laughing.
Yes. Okay. And let me even add to that. You get the, you know, his red card is 3-game ban. You get a further game. So he will serve a 4-match suspension.
Okay. My point now is, you see this thing that we're trying to do, is going to, like, I feel like football should be judged well across the board. Like, now, if you look at that, is a clear foul. Now, when you look at
very clear, I'm in agreement.
When you look at the force he used to put Cucurella's head, let me even put it like this. Let's say, let's even change the person that are pulling the person's hair. Let me say it is Diego Costa that pulled his hair like that.
When he stands up, fight.
Exactly. Then when he stand up, they might give Diego Costa a yellow card for fighting. Then they will not give Romero red card for actually pulling the hair. Do you understand? So my point now is, at the end of the day, just because, oh, maybe Cucurella is calm, he did not complain, and Christian Romero is a fine boy, he's not a dirty player, he doesn't have any malicious intent. Do you understand? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I was going to say that because it's not in the laws of the game, right? Is where they're hiding. But if fighting, right? I don't fight. People who know me know I don't exchange in anything physical contact, lie. But let's say if we're fighting and I drag your hair, it's obviously with the intent to hurt you.
Yes, so, exactly.
Look at it as, and then the phrase they use is what violent conduct. If dragging somebody's hair is violent conduct, I don't understand what violent conduct is.
See, there's something that we need to understand in the rule of the game. There is violent conduct and there is misconduct. That is a misconduct, and misconduct can lead to red card.
No,
misconduct can lead to red card as well. So I'll give you an example. So let me say two of us were jumping for a ball, and I use my elbow and I forcefully swing my elbow, and the way my elbow hit your head and the way you landed, like, if the referee look at it and say, oh, that is a clear misconduct,
I think they will even call it violent conduct. I think because it's elbow.
Okay. Now, so this one is not more violent. Even if you don't want to call it violent conduct, it's still a misconduct, and a misconduct can lead to red card. If you don't conduct yourself properly in a football pitch, and you now start putting your fellow players in harm's way, or start acting ill towards them, like we normally see Kane when he backtracks and allow the landing of the attacker or the opposition player so that the opposition player gets his landing fucked up. We forget that all these things can ruin players' career. So let's say there's a way he put Cucurella's hair, and maybe he pulled it all of a sudden.
His hair could have actually snapped. Like
yes, now
there's even that's why I'm looking at this has to be red card. You get, but then
if Cucurella was holding on the floor, holding his neck, red card. And red card. So, like, my point is, it's the same thing people normally say.
So do you think Cucurella is... I wouldn't say Cucurella is at fault, but do you think he should have made more of the situation?
Like, the guy was just being honest at the end of the day. Like, sometimes, to me, it pays off to be... To do all those antics and be extra about all those stuff, because we've seen it so many times.
Neymar, Suarez.
We've seen it so many times. Even penalties, like, you hear people complain, the player has to start rolling on the floor before you actually give a penalty, when you know that yes, this is a foul. Like, sometimes we see that they've stepped on it, they've impeded the player into the box, like they've matched him, you know, they've kicked him, but the referee is waiting for the player to start rolling before you know it's a man. I'm tired of saying one thing. At the end of the day, man, Chelsea really, really deserve all 3 points, but Anthony Taylor and his clowns, his gang of clowns robbed them.
Okay, so Anthony Taylor has a history of terrible decisions against Chelsea, and Chelsea fans are convinced it's on purpose. So I want two things from you. Do you actually think he's on purpose? And two, there has been a petition online for him never to ref a Chelsea game. We know the FA get their point. Do you get the point of for not wanting him near their team again?
All I'll say is, because of time, just be quick with it. All I'll just say is, before, years back, when I hear Chelsea fans complain about Taylor, I usually like sweep it under the carpet, like, nothing, you guys are just making too much of it. But after this game, I'm convinced that there is an agenda. Because when
have you seen clips of other incidents?
Yes. I've not even clips. I watched most of those games live. So, like, at the end of the day, like, the reason why I said I'm convinced that there's an agenda is there was something even pointed out to me. Rhys James was the first person to get a yellow card. Go and look at the foul. Go and look at the foul that Rhys James got the yellow card for. And go and look at the fouls that happened before Rhys James actually got his own yellow card. That's all I was saying.
You know, no single sports player got booked in that game, which is mind-boggling on its own, but there's no time to keep talking about it. So now, lastly, we could have actually started the episode, but sometimes they say save the best. Manchester United.
So where do we start from here?
I don't have to ask you. All I have is I don't understand what's going on.
We can blame Ten Hag tactics. First game, he started Christian Eriksen as the first nine. Second game, he played Christian Eriksen as the six. I don't know when Christian Eriksen started playing as the six. But
especially against this sort of opposition.
And so, at the end of the day, man, all I'll say is Ten Hag needs help. He needs serious help. And there's a key decision Ten Hag needs to make as well. I made a thread on it on Twitter moments before we even started recording. And it's simple as this. It won't take more than 30 seconds for me to even break down, even if it's a long thread. It's simple as this. When Pep Guardiola came into Manchester City, the first thing he did was get rid of Joe Hart and brought in Claudio Bravo. Claudio Bravo couldn't cut it, he brought in Edison. When Arteta took over from Arsenal, one of the first things he did was
sign Leno, right?
No, not even Leno. Leno was, I think he met Leno, but he now corrected it by taking Leno off. Ben Leno, and he now brought in Ramsdale. When you look at Leno and Joe Hart, people need to understand these two keepers, they are good traditional goalkeepers. What did I mean by that? They are good shot stoppers. If you look at Ben Leno's save record, he's a good shot stopper. Go and look at Joe Hart's save record. He's a good shot stopper as well. But the thing is, at the end of the day, they were not proficient enough to ball play. Now, David De Gea, the same thing. And I think Ten Hag needs to make a decision. Because when you look at David De Gea, he gets fidgety at times. He's too slow in making decisions. He now puts more pressure on the team because he's too slow in making decisions. He doesn't have the inner ability or the IQ to execute perfect passes into midfield. So at the end of the day,
IQ sounds too harsh, guy. Ah.
So at the end, because where I put IQ is you need to read which of the player is best placed to accept
to receive ball. Your pass. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So IQ plays into it. Now when you look at Edison is a weapon for City. That's why sometimes when you look at opposition players and opposition team, when they press City twice and they see how Edison is able to ping a perfect pass over their head by beating like six players and playing into De Bruyne or Foden for them to control and immediately starting an attack from that situation, the opposition, after that, you don't see the opposition press because they know that if they keep pressing, Edison has it in his locker to unlock the team, like to unlock their defense.
Their own backline,
So
we've seen him assist in the Premier League before.
I'm not even talking about, you see all those kind of pass where Edison will give one kind of pass that it will go through middle of four players and all of a sudden everywhere is open. Like, we need to, like, I'll even give you an example. I don't know if you saw the Arsenal game where Ramsdale gave Jesus a pass and he was now one-on-one with Evans. And he actually beat Evans and he was now free on goal to score a hat-trick. I don't know if you saw that chance. So my point is, a goalkeeper in modern-day football is very... A ball-playing goalkeeper in modern-day football is very important because everybody presses. And the only way to keep opposition players that presses at bay is by having a goalkeeper that is very good ball playing. But look at David De Gea in contrast. When he makes mistakes, he gives the ball away, it feeds into the opposition's ego and they can actually believe that, yes, if we keep pressing, we'll force a mistake and we'll get a goal. And eventually, that's what we saw with Brentford. So I believe for Ten Hag to be successful, either there's a drastic improvement in David Diaz's innate ability to ball play, or
I think it's too late for that.
Or he has to go into the market and sort it out.
Okay, so while I agree with you, right, and I can hear a lot of United fans right now shouting, yes, yes, what out of there, he doesn't come off his line to claim concede. He doesn't organize his defense, doesn't tell them to keep a high line. He doesn't play the ball out from the back well. He doesn't even play long passes accurately. I agree with all those things, right? But there are two things I want to say. Number one, the first goal that Brentford scored, Da Silva. Do you know who took that goal kick? It wasn't De Gea. It was Lisandro Martinez. So Lisandro Martinez, like maybe how many meters, how many inches away from De Gea? Maybe 5. So why is Lisandro Martinez playing the ball to De Gea and then De Gea is trying to play to everything? What purpose of does Lisandro Martinez playing that pass make? It is nonsense. Like, there's nothing anybody would tell me. I don't even care how good Ten Hag is. I don't care his tactics. I don't care he won the Dutch league. All well and good. That particular incident is absolutely rubbish for Martinez to be playing a pass to De Gea. You might as well play the pass to like maybe your left back, or you play pass to midfield. De Gea cannot play passes. But to play it to De Gea is total stupidity. That's one. Secondly, I think they have a lot of problems. And while I agree with you that De Gea is one of them, I think De Gea is very low in the list of problems they have.
No, I think it's not low because having a good ball-playing goalkeeper is integral to the way Ten Hag plays. Now, I agree with you that there is other problems. Like, I put a tweet out on Twitter, and I'll read it, and I'll ask it to you just before we end, because we'll be wrapping up soon.
Before you read it, what about that Lisandro Martinez goal kicking? Because I'm actually still irritated.
Honestly, I my memory of it is vague. I can't really remember.
Please, just watch. It was Lisandro Martinez that passed to De Gea, and De Gea wanted to pass to Eriksen. The second goal, De Gea wanted to pass to Eriksen, they scored.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. So listen to this. And for our listeners as well, it's an assignment. Homework. Listen. David De Gea, Luke Shaw, Maguire, Wan-Bissaka, Dalot, Fred, McTominay, Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, Elanga. Which of the players in that list I just mentioned will improve any of the top 5 teams in EPL?
Improve?
Yes. Which of them will start and improve any of the top 5 teams in EPL?
Sorry. Apart from De Gea, let me hear the names again. Sorry.
David De Gea, Luke Shaw, Maguire, Wan-Bissaka, Dalot, Fred, McTominay, Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, and Elanga. I don't know why you're laughing, but I know your answer already.
I cannot mention. Okay. Let's be serious. Right.
You will take what? Don't embarrass yourself.
I'll take 2 for the bench of Man City, not to start. I'll take 2. Do you know everybody to be on the bench? I'll take 2 for the bench of Man City.
Okay, for the bench. Okay, no problem. See, my point.
I'll take Fernandes for the bench. And I'll take Dalot for the bench.
I don't even think Fernandes plays for a team like Man City. You're not even good on the ball. Like, you're failed. That's the first criteria. You're like, you're already.
I think. I think he's too. He needs to know how to play in a system. He doesn't. I think he can work on that. Like, he's not passing.
How old is Fernandez? Is he a 19-year-old? How old is Fernandez? Like, you're saying it as if he's still a young star in development. How old is Fernandez? He's a seasoned pro. Like, let me even go back to the point of I'm trying to bring home with this list. The point I'm trying to bring home with this is, that's why I said I agree with you. I believe David De Gea is one of the problem. But when you actually look at Manchester United's squad, then you now actually look at their first 11, then you now compare their first 11 with other teams in the league, then you now understand why they're not good enough.
No. So, okay, wait. Sorry. I understand. You're making a great point, right? They're not good enough compared to City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal's teams, right? But they should be beating Brentford. They should be beating Brighton. They should be beating Southampton and the likes. So I would say it's a lack of height.
What I'm saying is it doesn't excuse it. Like, that's not what I'm even trying to say. It doesn't excuse it. The reason why I'm even highlighting this is, at the end of the day, these players, like, let me be real with you. Will Marcus Rashford even start for West Ham? That is how bad Rashford is right now. The only club I can see Rashford starting for is place like Bournemouth. Like, that is his level right now. I don't know if you saw, there was a point Mourinho made years ago. There's a TikTok about it. He said, look at the players that leave Manchester United and look at the club that they play for and if they even play, and if they even start for the club. So that point is, the players that leave Manchester United, look at where they go and play and look at if they are even starters for the club. And I said, when I leave, the next manager will still come and meet. That's why you mentioned Lukaku, Pogba, I mentioned some of these guys. He will meet some of all these guys and he will simply see that they're not really good enough.
Just on Rashford, and that was, I agree with
you.
There's a particular incident in this game that there was a player in front of Rashford. So common sense player. Even if you don't have sense, at least your brain will just tell that, if I play this shot, they will block it. So let me pass to someone, maybe my right or left back, making an overlap. Let me do something different. But he chose to play that shot that they will obviously block. So I don't know. I've given up on Rashford at the end of last season. So what am I saying? The beginning of last season, I gave up on Rashford. So for me, that's all I have to say. I think we've come to the end of the episode. Shout out to Gabriel Jesus, 19 points. I wish I captained him here, but we move. So last words.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Arsenal. Masterful performance from them. Just that Ramsdale became complacent and they considered 2 goals in the end. Yeah, man. Good game. Shout out to Mourinho for winning. Shout out to AC Milan for starting their campaign on it right soon. Shout out to Di Maria for having a fantastic debut. Shout out to Morata as well, who came back to Atletico
and got injured.
Bad luck always following him, but shout out to him as well. Shout out to Joao Felix.
Oh my God, three assists. See. I don't know if you're the one that I was telling that Joao Felix would actually be in the top 10 in the world if he was playing for an attacking team. And some people were telling me, how can I be saying that? They cannot finish. They cannot do that.
It doesn't sound like me, so it's not me. So shout out to David Alaba for coming on and just with his first touch of the game, scored a free kick. Shout out to him. Yeah, man. Shout out to myself for being a very good podcast host. A shout out to my listeners for taking the time to listen to me. No shout out to Joshua, of course, who has had a poor connection today and has been stressing me with listening here. So please don't be offended by the audio quality. It's Joshua. He's living in a forest.
All my fault, guys. I'm sorry.
Living in a forest. So without further dragging of this thing, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Do share, subscribe, and drop a comment for us or a review for us so that we can know what you really think of the show. So thank you for listening. Catch you in the next one. Goodbye for now. Yeah.